recorded live.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Talking Twilight Zone.
You open this door with the click of a mouse. Beyond it is a world of sound, thought, and opinion. In-depth discussions of television's greatest blending of science, superstition, imagination. And you're invited along. For the next 30 minutes, we'll be talking Twilight Zone.
Hello, folks. My name is Lynn, and you're listening to another installment of Talking Twilight Zone. As always, I am joined by my co-hosts, Robert and Bobby Neer, but Ken is not here today because that lucky dog is enjoying a wonderful cruise to Mexico with his family, but he'll be returning home on Monday. I'm sure he's having a fantastic time, but he did email his thoughts on this episode, which I'll be reading later. Today's episode up for discussion is number 38, and it's the second episode of Season 2 of The Twilight Zone. It's called Man in the Bottle, and I'll turn it over to Robert for the opening clip.
Mr. and Mrs. Arthur Castle, gentle and infinitely patient people whose lives have been a hope chest with a rusty lock and a lost set of keys. But in just a moment, that hope chest will be opened, and an improbable phantom will try to bedeck the drabness of these two people's failure-laden lives with the gold and precious stones of fulfillment. Mr. and Mrs. Arthur Castle, standing on the outskirts and about to enter the Twilight Zone.
Okay, thank you, Robert, and welcome to everyone here today, and welcome to you, Dave. The Man in the Bottle stars Luther Adler and Bibi Janis as Arthur and Edna Castle. This couple owns a pawn shop that's not doing very well. They owe just about everyone and can't seem to make ends meet. One day, while Arthur's agonizing over the stack of unpaid bills and overdue bills, an old woman comes into the shop with a cheap-looking wine bottle and tries to sell it to Arthur as an heirloom. He tells her it's just an old, worthless wine bottle. However, she starts to cry, and he feels sorry for her, so he gives her a dollar for it. His wife, Edna, berates him for giving another handout, and when Arthur starts ranting about how the pawn shop is a failure and how it put his grandfather and father in their graves, he knocks over the bottle, which then spews out smoke, and a well-dressed genie appears. While they're shocked at first, Arthur and Edna don't believe the genie when he tells them that he can grant them four wishes. So Arthur decides to make sure he's for real by asking him, of all things, to repair the broken glass in his display case. The genie complies. The glass is fixed. Arthur then grabs Edna and tells her they should ask for money, so he asks for $1 million. They get it and proceed to give about $60,000 of it away to their friends and neighbors. The tax man then shows up out of nowhere and tells them they owe the IRS $940,000 out of their million. Uh-oh. This leaves them with a whole $5. The genie appears and reminds Arthur that he still has two wishes, but also to understand that he must be prepared to deal with the consequences for any wish. So Arthur thinks and decides the best wish, with no consequences, will be to become the leader of a country who can't be voted out of office. Lo and behold, he becomes Adolf Hitler, at the worst time in Hitler's life. He is about to end his life by drinking poison. He starts to freak out and wishes that he could just go back to the beginning and be Arthur Castle again. Done. He's back in the shop, the way he was, still struggling financially, but content with Edna. They laugh about the turn of events and conclude they came out ahead because the display glass got repaired. But then Arthur accidentally cracks it again with a broom handle. They laugh. Oh, well. There is so much wrong with this episode. First off, and I think almost everyone would agree with me on this, what lunatic would ask a genie to prove his credibility with such a ridiculous wish as repairing some display glass? Come on, why not have him prove himself with a big wish right off the bat? What do they have to lose? Ask for $10 million, not a simple repair. They then ask for only $1 million and give thousands of it away. Why only $1 million, and why are they handing it out to every Tom, Dick, and Harry who walks through the door? I mean, being generous is one thing, but this is just nuts. And there's no such thing as a 75% income tax, please. How insane is that? Arthur actually wanted to ask for the money again, tax-free, but Edna stopped him. He should have ignored her. The The whole Hitler thing was crazy, and then ending up where he started only proved that he didn't know how to handle a good thing when he had it. He looked a gift horse in the mouth, and the horse swallowed him up. My rating for this episode is a 1 for poor. Entertaining story, but too stupid for words. I mean, that's how I felt about this. So I'm going to turn this over to Robert. What do you think of this, Robert?
Thank you, Lynn. Yeah, a lot better than King 9 Will Not Return. I have to give
absolutely
it that much credit.
That's true, absolutely.
And I agree with your points on a lot of stuff, you know, but I can see from the shop owner, he's more giving to people and that giveness. And it's kind of hard to be doing that when you're trying to run a business, an antique business especially, because you never know from time to time when you'll have a buyer come in and buy something. I mean, it's nice to help out the people in need, but you got to remember your own livelihood as well. So Jeannie's MO, so to say, is to, and also in other programs, you know, when you're done with the wishes, put the bottle or the thing back to where somebody else can find it and they'll get their wishes too. But I titled, when I did my review, I said, The Man in the Bottle or Wishes That Backfire, because it always seems in these genie stories that these wishes never work out for anybody. They always seem to backfire. And I noticed, too, that the woman that was in this episode also played in Season 1 The Fever as well. So she's not hitting very good luck on these episodes she's doing. So, but, you know, let's take a look at these separate wishes. I know you brought these up, Lynn, but and I agree with you. The first one was a waste about the glass being repaired. That should have been a freebie. That should have been an example to show him, you know, how it works. The second wish, the $1 million, I agree. There's no way you're going to give 95, well, you said 75, I said about almost 95%. 90% of it went to taxes. Yeah, and the taxman must have a radar or something. They always seem to home in on people that have money, and they happen to know when there's a big pile of money in somebody's business there that they can just walk in and say, oh, by the way, you know, you owe this much. Now, let's be serious here. My understanding is, even if you get $1 million, the IRS gets half, or pretty close to that. You know, and even them giving out $60,000 to people, even on taxes, you can claim some gifts. And he said in there that you couldn't claim gifts. And I said, you know, Rod, who were you using to do your tax with on this episode? So even that, before state, he says still cleared $540,000 before state. There's no way that you're going to end up paying the IRS $900, and unless you're like, you know, 5 or 6 years back tax-wise, and I could see that. But, I mean, for something, I didn't agree with that. And then the next switch, the third one about at least the wife and him and the genie, and I call him an evil gen, because I did like the gentleman that played the genie on there. They did discuss this one. Oh, you know, says the next wish, you know, they were talking, well, what if you were mayor? Well, then he could be voted out, and they were going through all the scenarios, and then they finally came up with this. When he said a dictator of a foreign country that cannot be voted out, I immediately thought, well, you know, we're thinking in the 1960s here that it would either be Italy or Germany or Japan. Now, I figured they would go to one of the dictatorships of the Second World War, and it had to end up being Hitler, so... And then again, here, another wasted wish. You had to use a wish to get back to your, you know, a reality, so to say. But, and then you end up at the end breaking the glass that was fixed in the first place. And so it almost steers into comedy where we all, well, we'll just have a little laugh. You know, so much of wishes, we shrug our shoulders, and life goes on. So with this one, I kind of give it a 2.5 out of 5. I thought it was above average, a lot better than the last story. But it reminded me here again of some other episodes. We know about the I Dream of Jeannie TV series later on. We talked also, I noticed in the reviews, and when we had Kelly on here as co-host, she mentioned about the X-File episode, which I happened to find a clip for. And I hope somebody knows French, because I sure don't. It's J-E. And then the next word is S-O-U-H-A-I-T-E, which is from Season 7, Episode 21. Now, this clip is 2 minutes 19. Reason being is because the genie in the rug in this episode talks about her origins in this one. So we'll go ahead and play that one next.
Ask him. He's got it all figured out.
Well, I know what he'd say. He'd say that you're some kind of a genie from 1001 Nights or something like that, and then you grant people wishes.
Well, there you have it.
Well, one thing I haven't been able to figure out is whether you're a good genie or an evil one. Everybody you come in contact with seems to meet a bad end.
That's the conclusion you've drawn? That I'm evil?
Well, possibly evil. Possibly cursed. A curse to others.
The only thing you people are cursed with is stupidity. All of you. Everybody. Mankind. Everyone I have ever come into contact with, without fail. Always asking for the wrong thing.
You mean making the wrong wishes?
Yeah, it's always, give me money. Give me big boobs. Give me a big hoo-hoo. Make me cool like the Fonz. Or whoever's the big name now.
You've been out of circulation a long time.
So what? In 500 years, people have not changed a bit.
500 years.
Granted, they smell better now, generally speaking. But human greed still reigns. Shallowness. A propensity for self-destruction.
You're saying that you have been a first-hand witness to 500 years of human history.
I used to be human. I was born in 15th century France, and then one day an old Moor came to my village peddling rugs, and I unrolled one that an Ifrit had taken residence in.
An Ifrit?
The very powerful class of genie. He offered me 3 wishes. For the first, I asked for a stout-hearted mule. For the second, a magic sack that was always full of turnips. Did I mention this was 15th century France?
What was your third wish?
My third, I pondered for a great while. I didn't want to waste it. So finally, feeling very intelligent, I spoke up and I said, Je souhaite une grande pouvoir et longue vie. I wish for great power and long life.
And thus became a genie yourself.
Give me the mark of the djinn. Right there. It's forever. Sort of like a prison tattoo. I should have been more specific.
And that always seems to be the theme to a lot of these genie stories. You know, you have to be specific. You have to, you know, describe what it is that you want. But even being specific, it still can go the wrong way or turn on you. With Mulder, he makes the right decision at the end of this episode. Another one that I was remembering, too, was, you know, not only the genie can give wishes, but the devil can give wishes as well. I have the remake trailer for Bedazzled, which was the remake of the original one with Dudley Moore and Peter Cook. But this one kind of ties in with the wish that Arthur made about dictator in a foreign country. I'll play this one.
Elliot Richards needs a life.
You're the man, Elliot.
It's all about first impression.
Go there, say hello.
But most of all, he wants Allison.
Hi.
Hi. Do I know you?
Oh, I sure hope so. We've only been working together for the last 4 years.
I don't think I've ever seen you before.
You know, I'm here with some friends. I was wondering if maybe you wanted to...
Elliot has never had any of his dreams come true.
I would give anything to have that girl in my life.
Until now.
Hello. You're very glib. I thought you were a whiz with the ladies.
Well,
let's go someplace quiet so we can talk.
Okay.
What if I told you that I have the power to give you anything and everything you've always dreamed of?
Who are you?
Promise not to tell anyone? I'm the devil.
Yeah, right.
I am the devil. Satan, Lucifer, the Prince of Darkness. Well, the Princess of Darkness, anyway. Why don't we take a look at the contract? I, the devil, with offices in Purgatory Hell in Los Angeles, will give you 7 wishes for 1 piddling little soul.
Is this real?
It could be. Sign it, Elliot.
Okay, I wish... that I were married to Allison, and that I were very, very rich, and very powerful.
You got it.
Buenos días, señor. ¿Me apetece algo de comer?
Como dices, no hablo español.
Elliot may have 7 wishes.
They turned me into a drug dealer!
What's the big deal?
You are so rich and powerful.
But she's not going to give him...
back so soon?
...a chance in hell.
Oh!
bedazzled.
Nobody gets a poopy right away. That's why you get 7 wishes.
One scene that I like from in the beginning of the movie where he makes a wish. This is not really a wish. He wishes for a Big Mac and a drink, and they get on the bus, they go down to the local McDonald's, and then she orders it for him. He has to pay for it. I kind of got the kick out of that one. And I didn't get fries to go with that, he says. But yeah, you know, the different variations between the devil and the genie that can give wishes as well. But again, like I said, I give this a 2.5 out of 5, and I'll pass it over to Bobby.
Thank you, Robert. All I can say is, before I get started, let me say that having heard that first clip, I now realize that there is indeed a wish worthwhile to make, and that is bigger boobs. So that's the first time anybody ever came up with anything that was really worthwhile. This is a very, very disappointing episode to me. And that's because Rod Serling, of course, as we all know, was a genius writer and a man with great imagination. I mean, some of the stories he wrote in The Twilight Zone, such as Eye of the Beholder and other ones, are just brilliant, and nobody else could have written them better. But sometimes it seems to me in this series he's kind of slumming. He just puts together stories that are either very weak or very obvious. Now, here he's got, first of all, an incredibly derivative story. I think I heard the Genie in the Bottle story when I was about 3 years old the first time. So and there's nothing new about it at all. And then, to make matters worse, he doesn't tweak it at all. He doesn't change it in any way. Every time you hear of this Genie in the Bottle story, whether it takes place thousands of years ago or the other day, it's always the same story. The people who have the wishes always wish for the wrong things. And that doesn't teach anything. I mean, the moral of the story, of the whole Genie thing, has always been be careful what you wish for. You might actually get it. And material possessions are not what life is all about and don't necessarily bring you happiness. Then why not prove it? It certainly isn't proven here because the characters are too stupid. I don't get that out of this. If they had been smarter and had thought about the wishes there should be and not gone down an obvious road, you would have learned the lesson. Now, I think you should have written a story where they thought about it to the degree the genie would let them and picked the proper wishes only to have it turn out bad anyway, meaning that having wishes and everything you want in life does not necessarily make you happy, something that your parents teach you when you're a little kid, that, you know, you want this, you want that, but is that really going to change your life? It doesn't go there. And so when the story ends, you look at it and go, oh, yeah, I could have done better than that. It teaches nothing. It proves absolutely nothing. Obviously, as both Robert and Lynn have said already, the wishes are completely asinine. I'll tell you what. Here's the number one wish anybody who finds a genie in a bottle should make above anything else is good health for the rest of your life. Because if you don't have that, you've got nothing. It doesn't matter how much money you get. It doesn't matter how much power you get. If you're going to get sick and die like everybody else does, you've got nothing. Only your relatives will get the money.
But the only problem with that, Bobby, is that then you get to be immortal, because if you got good health, you keep going on and on and on. Then
Gordon
Jameson.
No, I didn't say immortality. I said just good health. I'm not suggesting that you will live forever. Just that you will live a long life and not get sick. I mean, so he gets $1 million, or anybody gets $1 million, and then you get cancer and die anyway. All the money in the world isn't going to cure you if there's no cure. Mm. Who knows that knew that better than Rod Serling, who died, I believe he was 51, when he died from having a bad heart. And he got cheated out of about 25 years at least of life, even though he was very successful, very famous, and I assume made quite a bit of money over the course of his short life. But in the end, he died too young, so it doesn't prove anything. The first thing, good health. Not necessarily to live forever. No, I know all the obvious reasons for that may not be a good idea. But at least, I don't care if you live to be 70, 75, 80, 85, whatever, just don't get sick. That's all. Stay well. That's the main thing that you have to have. The money is obvious, and that's because we live in that kind of society. You can't change that. We live in a society that is run by money, and in order to have everything, you need money. But you don't need millions and millions and millions and millions of dollars. It's ridiculous. To do what? How big a house do you need? How many clothes do you need? How many cars do you need? Take a look at show business and the number of people who have found great success and made millions and have turned to drugs and alcohol and some have committed suicide. Well, why? We look at them and we go, why would you do that? You had everything everybody aspires to, and you weren't happy anyway. So that's where the big flaw is in the wishes. That's, I mean, so I think what you do is you scale it back. You wish for good health, wish for a lot of money, but not a ridiculous amount of money. I mean, he doesn't need all that money. It's absurd. The tax thing is obvious. That's ridiculous. I only assume that Serling didn't think much of his audience or thought that nobody in his audience had a lot of money and didn't have that kind of tax bracket. But, of course, it's ridiculous. Even back in 1960, you could have hired a lawyer, a tax advisor, somebody to tell you what to do with the money so that the government didn't take it all. So that's absurd. And it's like Lynn said, you know, even if you did nothing, if you just sat here and counted it, when the IRS shows up at the door, give them half. Well, you can't live on half of that? You got to be kidding me. So all of those, that's the problem with the story. The character, the business about fixing the case at the beginning is too idiotic for words. I mean, obviously, if you don't believe the genie and you want him to prove himself, have him give you something really nice. Start out with the money or something like that and say, all right, if it's true, I want the money right in front of me right now. And when it shows up in front of you, you'll know he's telling the truth and he really can do that. So that really didn't make any sense. And then at the end of the story, after they've gone through this whole thing, they just kind of shrug and go, well, you know, nothing ventured, nothing gained. It was a lot of fun, and we had money for a few minutes. That's, you know, you don't get anything out of that either. As far as the power thing is concerned, how idiotic is that? You're going to ask to be a world leader if you know your history, you know that every world leader, every tyrant has always ended up dead. So that's a waste of time. Why not just wish to be president of the United States, although I can't imagine anybody would want to be. If you want to have power, we're the most powerful country on the planet, so why don't you just say, yeah, I'd like to be president. That should be enough to soothe your ego, but you're going to have a lot of problems, so I think you're damn fool if you do that. But there are all kinds of ways. The trouble with the genie stories is always that people go overboard. They ask for too much, $1 million, $5 million, $10 million, $100 million, $1 billion, whatever. It's just overkill. It's just utterly ridiculous. So I think, if, like I said, the moral of the story, and I always thought that was the moral of the story since I was a little kid, was that if you can have everything you want, think about it for a minute and think about whether material possessions really are going to make it for you. I mean, is that going to do it? That's going to make you happy? Not necessarily. Little things in life can make you happy. Not necessarily money. Everybody wants to live comfortably, not to worry about money in the bank and paying your bills and all of that. And if you can just get that far, that's fine. But, I mean, Donald Trump is an incredibly wealthy man, but he doesn't own all the money in the world. So it's not necessary to go there. The story itself is just disappointing. I mean, that is such a derivative story. You mean to tell me that Rod Serling can't take a story that everybody knows from their childhood and make it a little bit different to make it look better? I find that hard to believe. And there's other stories in the series, much as I love the series. There's other stories where he does the same thing. He just kind of lets it lay there. And then you know where this is going. From the minute it starts, from the minute the genie shows up, anybody over the age of 10 can predict what's going to happen. He's going to ask for money, but it's not going to be right for some reason. He's going to ask to be somebody. He's going to turn out to be bad. He's going to want power, and that's going to turn out to be bad. Everything he asked for, you know, these two are fairly well up there in years. Did they never hear the story about the magic lantern and how much trouble they can get you in? I mean, I find that very bizarre. So I think in that respect, it's disappointing. It might have been an interesting story if we had learned the lesson that there's almost nothing you can wish for that doesn't have a catch to it. Somewhere along the line, you got to pay the piper on this. Life's not so easy that you just say, yep, give me this, give me this, give me this, and I'll shut up for the rest of my life. Not necessarily. Don't bet on it. And the story fails in that respect. It goes exactly where you think it's going to go. I gave it a 1, and I was being generous. I think it could have been a 0 because there's just nothing happening that's interesting here, and it's just too painfully obvious. I realize it's only a half-hour story. I was on the Internet yesterday, and I saw the Twilight Zone stories after commercials and intros was just 23 minutes. Now, you can't do a whole lot in 23 minutes, but you could do a little more than this, and I think Serling just feels it. That's why it's watchable. Yes, anything is better than King Nine Will Not Return. That's absurd. But it's not, you know, I'm empty at the end. All you do is laugh at it and then go, what a couple of bozos. They got exactly what they deserve, which is absolutely nothing. But I won't be that hard on the episode. I won't give it nothing. I'll give it a 1. Robert, all right, Lynn, that's it for me. Yeah, what? Sure.
It reminded me of the clip that I played from the Twilight Zone, X-Files, where later on Mulder does make a wish, and he wishes for world peace, and then he looks out the window, and everybody on Earth is not there on Earth. And then the genie goes again, well, you didn't specify human peace
right.
on Earth. And the same thing with The Simpsons. There was an episode of The Simpsons where Lisa wishes for world peace, and it happens, and everybody lays their arms down, and there's no weapons, no war. But then the aliens from the sky comes and invade the Earth and take over the Earth because there's no defense.
Right. Which goes to show you that there's always a catch to everything. And the bad part about the genie thing is that you've got to make snap decisions. I assume he's not going to come back the next day and give you time to make up your mind. Think about it overnight. Let me know what you want. He stands there in front of you and says, oh, you got three wishes. Let's hurry it up. I got to get out of here. So you have to do it right away, which means that the humans being the way they are, the first thing that's going to come to your mind is money and things like that. That's where the problem is. But you're right. I mean, there's a catch to everything. I can't think of anything really that you could ask for that somewhere along the line doesn't have some bad aspect to it. Life's not that simple. And there's always something in it where you go, oh, you know what, I really wish I hadn't said that. Now I'm sorry. There are people in the world right now who have great success who are sorry that they have it. And, you know, it's tough. So you got to think. The problem is you don't get the time to think. All right, Lynn, that's it for me.
Okay, well, I do have, even though Ken is not here, he did email his thoughts on this, so I'll quickly give his thoughts. Ken said, after three clunkers in a row, the series is back in the game with a story that is memorable and worthy of water cooler talk at the office. For me, I have seen the story now on five different occasions over the years, and I remember watching one night with my kids when it came on, and my kids would ask me if this was a good one. And my response was, it depends. On the one hand, the intrigue of having four wishes would overwhelm anyone. On the other hand, the frustration of enduring adverse consequences gives anyone pause. Now, episode 38, The Man in the Bottle, is exactly what The Twilight Zone is all about. The strange, eerie, unusual, and unexpected turn of events in the life of seemingly ordinary people. An owner of an antique shop is struggling with his business, but has a kind heart for his customers. He receives a bottle from a customer and finds out a genie is inside who grants four wishes to them. The performance of Luther Adler is exemplary as he plays the role of Arthur Castle, a typical businessman. Also, a fine performance from Bibi Janis, who plays his wife. But Joseph Ruskin steals the show as he plays the mysterious genie and grants the wishes. By now, everyone watching the story wishes themselves that they were in the shoes of Arthur Castle. This is the key to excellent story writing. Get your viewing audience involved, and they will be eager to stay with the story till the end. The first wish by Arthur was totally wasted. He wishes for the glass in his display case to be repaired. No doubt everyone watching groans at the television set and says, you knucklehead, maybe we would make the same mistake and ask for something minor also, though. Castle is impressed and now reacts just like all of us, money, money, and lots of money. His second wish is $1 million cash, which he gets. The glee in the couple's eyes is priceless. They share their wealth with their friends, which shows their kind hearts, but one big problem, Taxman wants 95% of the loot. Yikes. The third wish was odd for me, but will live in Twilight Zone lore. Castle wishes for power that cannot be taken away. He turns into Hitler, and all of us in the viewing audience are dismayed and shocked. What a colossal blunder. That has to be the dumbest wish in the history of mankind. But even weirder is the fourth wish, which is to return to normal again, as if nothing had happened at all. At this point, I shout at Castle, you bumbling clown and idiot, what in the world are you doing? Well, Rod, you succeeded again in presenting a classic story with a moral for all of us to learn. Be careful what you wish for. Well, Mr. Serling, you got me thinking again. What would Ken do with four wishes? And Ken says his first wish would be long life with no health problems. But then he says, whoops, I blew it. Remember Walter Jameson, a former wife, may blow my head off. And Ken's second wish is $1 trillion with no taxes. But then he says, whoops, I tanked again. 1 billion people know I have the money and want a handout forever. Wish number three, Ken says, would be paradise as he owns all the Hawaiian Islands and Tahiti too. Whoops, too much sun, and he dies from skin cancer. And wish number four is world peace for eternity. Ken says, is that possible? Anyway, my rating for episode 38, The Man in the Bottle, is excellent. As a small business owner myself, I can relate to the story. I know other people will think the story is shallow and corny, but all small business owners stick together and support each other because we know what it takes to survive in this cold world. The only reason I will not give a classic rating is because of the casting of characters here. I would have used a young couple starting out in their business and see how wild their wishes would be. The Four Wishes by Castle were typical of older people and somewhat predictable. And that those were Ken's thoughts on this episode. So, now I'd like to hear what Dave has.
Well, yeah, I quite liked it. And I'll just put up one fact in there. In 1960, the tax rate in the States was 91%, the highest rate of tax. So, they did have
it
high
was?
Taxes. Yeah.
It was?
There's the link. 91%, yeah. And also, of course, $1 million then was only probably worth a third of £1 million, because it was something like it was nearly $3 to the pound. It might have actually been less than that, might have been $2. So it actually wasn't an exorbitant amount of money when you think that it's going to last them for the rest of their lives. But a few things. The only real issue I had with it was the fact that it was four wishes, which was obviously used because they knew they were going to waste, as it were, that wish at the beginning of the story. And the thing is, of course, the couple didn't believe this man was a genie. They thought it was some trick or magic or they'd been hypnotized. So they asked for a little trivial thing because they thought mending the glass in itself was a spectacular event. They weren't thinking about personal gain at that point. The reason why, of course, he was intent on having money as his first wish was, as you see in the first scene, he's absolutely sick with worry about their financial situation. But the very first thing he did, even though we saw him like that, was give that lady a dollar for a worthless bottle. So it was quite in character, I thought, for him to start handing out this money almost as soon as he got it and share the joy around. The fact that the tax collector comes in, one would assume, is because the genie has this malicious streak in him that things will always go wrong. There is always some sort of way. And as Robert said, you know, you really have to be specific with those wish. In fact, the genie does, in fact, give them some warning that any wish they make is irrevocable unless they actually use another wish to counteract the first wish. So I think, in a way, they were naive, these couple, but that was probably a sign of their characters. If they hadn't been that sort of couple, they would have given up on that shop years and years ago. One or two other things. I mean, the idea of wishes has been used in Buffy the Vampire Slayer with not just devils, but in their case with vengeance demons. So that's
Cordelia,
another one.
Yeah.
If you think about old films, The Thief of Baghdad, the young boy in Thief of Baghdad on the beach, first thing he wishes for, because he's starving, hungry, can't think of anything else but some sausages. And the first thing he gets is a pan full of sausages to eat with the genie, which I thought was rather funny. One or two other interesting little facts. The chap that was starring in the role, of course, played Hitler in one or two other plays or performances, so he was an actual choice for the part. The chap, Joseph Ruskin, who he played the... let me just get it right. He played the genie. One sort of Twilight fact was he was the uncredited voice of the Cataminx, is it? Ketamins from the Twilight Zone episode To Serve Man. So he had been in thing before. The thing that Robert says about...
I didn't know that.
Yeah. The thing that Bobby said about the wish thing. Well, I mean, in a way, we could argue that the episode he did about that love potion was almost a sort of be careful what you wish for. He wished for that girl to be absolutely, truly devoted in love with him. And we knew that all went wrong. But I did like two things. Although it was four wishes, and I think that didn't really hang well with me. It was, of course, to have that little funny moment with the glass. And then, of course, his wife says, well, look, we've come out ahead. We've got the cabinet fixed. And then, of course, the inevitable, he breaks it with the mop as they're cleaning up. But one of the nice little touch I quite like was right at the end when the bottle is thrown in the wastebasket outside, the broken shards of it, it miraculously repairs itself, which I thought was a nice little thing. In other words, basically saying, wait till the next unsuspecting person comes along. And therefore, in effect, it shows that it is a sort of trap. You know, there's no way this is going to end well. And you almost feel that even if these people had been a bit more savvy and a little bit more careful with the wishes, it still would have gone wrong. I take what you said about wishing for good health. I certainly would have chosen that. But you never know. The first thing that could have happened is they could have had good health but be paralysed. You've got good health, but if you're paralysed in a bed for 40 years, that might not be anybody's ideal way of finishing the rest of their life off.
Well, I wouldn't call that good health.
Why not? If their body's
being paralyzed
perfectly healthy,
in a bed is not good health.
But they might be immobilised.
No, that's not good health to me, as far as I'm concerned.
But if it was a genetic thing or something.
That's still not good health, though. I just think that being immortal is not the greatest thing in the world. But at least staying relatively healthy would be. But it's just my opinion.
Yeah, I think you're pretty. Again, it's back down to specifics, isn't it? You would have to ask for 100% perfect. You know, to be the ultimate human health that a person can be, almost. You know,
right. He could have wished I had good health in the remaining
human
of my lifetime. My lifetime, yeah. And his lifetime might be 60. Who knows? You know.
Yeah, a perfect human specimen of some sort. Yeah.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
I also thought it was kind of neat that the bottle couldn't be destroyed. I mean, when it repaired itself, I thought that was neat how it just, you can't destroy that bottle. It just repairs itself every time.
Yeah, I did think it was strange that he said he only did this once every 100 years. Would have thought he would do it for, basically, that was his job. And it will be there for the next hapless person that came along, whether that was, the next day or 10 years down the line or so on, because, of course, he couldn't control when the bottle was opened. So in that sense, you would have thought that was out of his control. But I liked it. I would say I'd give it 3 out of 5. I know it's a tried, trusted and well-trodden path and formula, but I thought they did it in a reasonably entertaining way. By the way, I should say that Joseph Ruskin, who played the genie, appears still to be alive. Born in 1924, still appears to be alive according to the wiki page. So, and he was also in a lot of Star Treks as well. He made quite a lot of things, Robert, in Star Trek. So I thought it was quite a little nice little story. It was self-contained. It worked well. You fairly well knew how it was going to turn out. I thought that they might just let them get ahead of the game with the cabinet unbroken, but I thought that was rather a nice touch in a way that he broke it while they were cleaning up. So yeah, I thought it was quite a nice episode. It was a warm episode, and I quite enjoyed it.
It was entertaining. It was a little bit crazy, but it was entertaining.
I was thinking over the years, you see these stories, genie stories, how, these wishes that these people make, 3, 4, 7, however many wishes, they never seem to come out on the positive end of these wishes. It always seems to be the curse of the genie when the wishes are passed on. Even in horror movies, the leprechaun, for example, leprechaun can give out wishes as well, but he can also distort them. The Wishmaster is another movie where he's an evil djinn, and they get grand wishes too, but their wishes go south, so to say, as well. So the only thing that seems to be the wish that is looked at is the release of the genie itself. And
right.
Nobody will wish that. So.
Right. And one thing I would say is that since this... And I don't know whether it went out as family viewing or late night viewing when it first aired in the States, but you can imagine people around the television afterwards doing exactly what we were doing and thinking how we would elaborate our wishes to make sure they were like watertight ones. So I bet there's a lot of discussion after this episode by families around the TV.
Well, also, if you remember, and I think I brought this up when he was getting ready to make his third wish after he blew all the money and had to give it to the IRS, he was ready to wish for the money again, but without, after the taxes. Yeah, and Bibi Janice, his wife, she said, no more money. And I thought, wait, why not? Now he knows what to do. Let him wish for $2 million tax-free or after taxes. And she said, no. And I never understood why she wouldn't let him wish for the money again. That bothered me in that scene. I was like, wait a minute, ignore her. Wish for the money and do it right this time.
Yeah.
Then a car could have crashed into the building, and then they would have to repair the building. Money could have gone, the building could have caught on fire. They didn't have no insurance, so there goes the money for that. See, it's...
Yeah,
No. I would have wished for something like $1 million a year income after taxes and to be inflation-proof. So that,
hey, that's good.
Because, of course, in what you can live on in $1 million in 1960, you'd only be able to live half as well in 2000 on
that's
that
right.
same money.
That's right.
Well, it's not going to work. You can't do the story by having the person getting the wishes do the right thing, because then there is no story. And that's the problem with it. And
yeah, that's what I'm saying.
All the way back in season one, when we had Time Enough at Last, that's a perfect example of tweaking the story a little bit. And instead of, after a nuclear war, wanting to survive, actually finding that you want to die with everybody else because you're the only one around. That changes everything around. That's why I think that's a far superior story, because it's not what you expect. You expect
right.
that if you were lucky enough to survive, lucky you, but in reality, that's the worst thing that could possibly have happened to you. That's the difference.
Yeah.
This story, Sterling is just, he's just playing the game. He's just going on saying, well, you all know this story already, that they're going to push for the wrong things, everybody's going to get in trouble, blah, 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 and in the end, they're going to go back to the way they were and be happy with that. No kidding. That's why I don't like it, because there's just nothing new there. I mean, Sterling is better than that. And he could have done it a little bit differently, just so it was a little bit more of a surprise. There's nothing there.
Exactly.
It's just the genie in the bottle story. Who
well, they've done it as well, though, haven't they? They did that one where the chap wanted people to be more like him, and he ended up being the whole world populated by his exact double.
They all turned to him. They all turned into him. Everybody was him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Those are stories with surprise endings. This is not.
And then we take variations on the wish factor. One story that was out there for years was the one about the box, where the one person takes this box to a person or couple, and it has a button on it, and say, I'll give you this amount of money and to press this button on the box. But if you press this button on the box, then somebody else dies.
Right.
So,
yeah. Mm-hmm. They redid that. They redid that story for the new Twilight Zone too in the '80s. I didn't care for it, but they made a movie out of that too.
Mm-hmm.
Well, isn't there another one with a jukebox that plays music or something? Can't remember. Are they going to a diner?
Oh no,
or is it a fortune teller?
Nick of Time, where they were sitting at the table in the diner, and it was the fortune telling machine.
Right.
Feeding pennies into it. Yeah.
Or even Big, for example, with Tom Hanks going to the fortune teller and getting the thing, I wish I was big. And the next thing is, he wakes up and he's an adult.
He's big. Yeah, I love that movie. So basically, I mean, this was not a classic or anything. I mean, Ken thought it was excellent, and that's fine. But, overall, I would give this, it would go anywhere from a poor to a good, depending on your view. It was entertaining to say the least. I'm not saying that it wasn't entertaining. It was just so crazy, with the wishes and everything. But it was worth looking. It was worth watching. It was watchable. So that's all we have on that, I think. Anybody else have anything to add?
Nope.
No?
Nope.
Okay. Well, we will be back in 2 weeks, and our next story is Nervous Man in a $4 Room. So, you haven't seen that one, definitely take a look at that, and that's what we're going to be talking about in 2 weeks. So I want to thank Dave for being here, and this was, as usual, a fun discussion, as always, and we will see you in 2 weeks. So thanks, everybody. See you then. Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Thank you.